The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. You're listening to the number one program for progressive minds in the world. We're here to empower people. We're here to include people, not exclusion. Inclusion. Today we will look at the issues that are important for our health and well-being, both physically and as a nation. My guest will be a continuation of our series, Conversations with Remarkable Minds, developing an echo mind, changing the way we think to create a sustainable world, the world we want and the world we deserve. Frances Moore LePay will be my guest in about 20 minutes. Our issue of the day, time permitting, will be from Professor John Cozy, The Triumph of Capitalism, A Jobless Nation. My intent also, including my own commentary that I stayed up last night and wrote, will be deconstructing the myths that you hear from the left and the right of what will help save America and how we should go about getting jobs. Oh, we can get jobs already. Easily. There is no reason that I see that we couldn't employ 15 million Americans at gainful employment, meaning they can make enough money to pay their bills and have a quality of life and contribute to the larger economy. But we're not going to do it from the left to the right. It is not humanly possible. I will deal with that. Also, we're going to challenge the big defenders now of Gardasil and vaccines, including a professor who offered $10,000 to a charity of Michelle Bachmann's choice if she can provide one person who can be shown to have been made mentally ill because of injections of Gardasil. Her daughter, Zeta, was a normal, healthy 13-year-old who loved her family, her friends, and her phone. She once was a popular cheerleader and an A student who texted and talked tirelessly. Now she is silent. She is strapped to her wheelchair, her head leaning against the chest, her eyes wandering, seemingly sightless. She cannot walk, she cannot eat, nor can she speak. And how did this happen? She had the Gardasil vaccine. Dr. Art Kaplan, you can make your $10,000 check out to a charity that I will name. You have lost your bet. Oh, did I forget? We don't have just one person we can show has been injured by Gardasil. We can show you a lot. The analysis, this is the official government's own analysis, and I will quote it verbatim. Acute disseminated illness, 21 cases. Encephalomyelitis and encephalitis, 53 cases. Demyelinization, which leads to mental retardation, 60 cases. Psychotic disorder, 14 cases. Abnormal behavior, 49 cases. Cognitive disorder, 22 cases. Mental status changes, 41 cases. Nuclear magnetic resonance imaging brain abnormalities, 132 cases. Speech disorder, 90 cases. Myelitis travers, 30 cases. And facial palsy, 138 cases. Now, for those of you who are not aware of it, encephalitis is known to be an infection that involves inflammation of the brain that can cause mental retardation. And right there we have 53 cases. According to Wikipedia, encephalomyelitis is a general term for inflammation of the brain and spinal cord, describing a number of disorders, including, and then it goes in to describe these, of what happens when you have demyelination of the brain and spinal cord triggered by vaccines or viral infections, and this can lead to forms of mental retardation. So we have the peer-reviewed journals, the Journal of Neurology, Journal of Medical Cases, Neurology, Volume 72, page 2132. So for all of you within the pro-vaccine, pro-medical world, you have lost your bet. You have embarrassed yourself in the eyes of real science. You have no science on your side. You've bastardized science. I am so offended by the article that was sent out without question by the major media that was carried in all the newspapers to try to show that Michelle Bachmann was wrong. And in the process of doing it, use her statements about the woman who came over after her speech and said, my daughter was injured, my daughter suffered mental retardation, and Bachmann said of her concern, forget Bachmann, you are going after Bachmann. But in the process of going after Bachmann, you diminished the illnesses of 24,000 adverse effects by individual young girls who were sickened, some with brain abnormalities. I just quoted from the federal government's own registry, and 104 dead. How in the world do you call yourselves journalists at the New York Times or the New York Post? Well, you shouldn't even be calling yourself journalists. You're not. But how do you at the Times, when you allow this type of reporting and you do not go to the actual foundational resource of the government's own figures to show that what this scientist was saying is wrong, what the vaccine makers have been saying is wrong, the entire industry is built. So this morning I have hired a group of scientists, outstanding scientists, who are working in my office as we speak, and they will show you the science within the next 2 weeks that when you say the word immunization and vaccine, you are talking about two different worlds, and I will prove it unequivocally, absolutely, that the battle starts today. I'm making this a priority to show the massive fraud, one of the most complete frauds in American and world history. I am saying vaccination cannot be used to create immunization in the current context. You cannot tell any individual getting a vaccine, any vaccine, singularly or in combination, that when you're given that vaccine, you're protected for life from that disease. The battle begins, and I want you to know that I'm full first in front and will be leading this to show you you have no science on your side. You have dogma, creed, and ritual. Gee whiz, you're like a religion, aren't you? Now it's time for the truth. And the truth is, if you believe, if any of you believe, that your vaccines for anything are absolutely conferring immunological protection and giving you the antibodies that will be there to protect you from that condition, and ask the person giving that to you to give you a written assurance that if it does not provide you protection and does not assure your safety, that they will cover all your damages personally. And let's see who will write you that assurance. I will be presenting my information on upcoming programs. Next up, children with autism and gastrointestinal symptoms have altered digestive genes, from Science Daily. And this is from PLOS One, one of the most respected scientific journals in the world. And this was done at the Columbia University Mailman School of Public Health and Harvard Medical School. I'll quote this. Researchers at the Center for Infectious Immunity report that children with autism and gastrointestinal disturbances have altered expression of genes involved in digestion, and these variations may contribute to changes in the types of bacteria in their intestines. Now, what's important is that for a long time, those of us in the field of helping people with autism, one of the very first things we do, we put them on a gluten-free diet, we get rid of the dairy, we get them natural chelation, we rebalance the intestine with things such as glycine and probiotics. We give them a methylated form of B12 and a methylated form of folic acid. We give them enzyme therapy, and guess what? As we rebuild their intestine, so do those symptoms begin to diminish. We then work on rebalancing brain chemistry and rebuilding dendrite activity and neuron integrity. And hence, we've been able to the consternation of the medical community, we have reversed autism, completely normalizing children who would have been at this point in their life subjugated to nothing more than medications and kept in a zombie position. Because when they get too big and they have advanced autism or Asperger's syndrome, they are out of control. And you don't want to know the story of what happens when someone no longer has. Where's your son? Isn't he 16 with autism? Where'd he go? Is he dead? No, he's in an institution. Have you ever seen anyone take you into that institution? Have you ever seen wards of people who are just on medications 24/7? They have no idea they're alive, and you would know they were alive. That's the dirty, dark secret of autism in America. What about us getting those kids and getting them back their life? Do we have examples? Hundreds. Are the people who have gotten that results qualified? Medical doctors, as parents, whose children became autistic after they, the parents who are doctors, gave their children vaccines. Today, we have the patients, we have the parents, and we have results. Anyone at any major media covering it? Not a one. The official story cannot be challenged. Any cure for any disease, no matter what the disease, and no matter how perfect the cure or its documentation, whether it's from AIDS, heart disease, cancer, autism, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, it must, without exception, be rejected, challenged, and kicked under the bus. Why? The moment you challenge that the only treatment is a officially sanctioned treatment, the only way of understanding an illness is through official science, and you do it outside of the halls of official, then you show that there is another approach. You open a door. They cannot afford to have you open a door. It could undermine the power they have over funding, over public representation, over talking before committees of Congress, over direction of the course of research. Hence, you become the virus in their computer. They will not tolerate that. If you're a Nobel Prize winner, they'll make you seem like a blathering idiot. They can destroy anyone's reputation, and they use the New York Times and other despicable publications of no repute to do it. Shame on the reporters for the New York Times being official reporters, but I guess that's the best you can do. In the real world, where it takes some adventure and takes some truth and takes some risk and takes some of a moment of reality, will you tell the truth if it means losing something? The ability to tell the truth and know that in the process of telling the truth, you risk a career. You risk access to sources that are official. You risk the paradigm being shifted. That determines who is truly progressive and who is not. And we have no progressive reporters at that piece of crap publication. Next up, but I'm going to deal with this in great depth. I'm going to be doing a commentary of all things with Chris Hedges on the Reverend Jeremiah Wright's recalls, Obama's fall from grace. You won't want to miss that on the Progressive Commentary Hour, the most listened to radio downloaded in America, tonight at 7 on Progressive Radio Network. Tens of thousands march against nuclear power in Tokyo. 60,000 people in Tokyo marched against nuclear power. Did you see this? Was it a big news story? Not in the United States. A short history of the Glass-Steagall Act, you know, the act that Bill Clinton and others caused to be taken away and the results of it. That's why we're at where we're at today. Also from Raj Patel, why hunger is still with us. 10 sides God is furious with the right. You'll enjoy that. Another commentary. Recent blackout highlights our nation's rickety power structure. Why won't they put the $500 million into putting the surge protectors and at these major power stations to prevent the solar storms from knocking out the electricity in much of America, including nuclear power plants, which caused major Fukushima meltdowns? I'm going to go into this in great depth. This is from an important Ariel Winningberg in ProPublica, all about how bad is our nation's electrical grids. They're already going out. And I'll go into that in depth. So we got a whole lot of important commentaries on the Progressive Commentary Hour, 7 p.m. tonight. But I'll be sharing more of my own views of why the truth is the last thing discussed and the first thing surrendered on the left and the right today. Next up, before we go to our guest, good news on what you can do that can make a difference. You've heard me say many times that people who make radical changes in their diet and their lifestyle frequently are able to do better than any medication. Here's the proof of that. This is showing a team of Spanish researchers published in a peer-reviewed journal showing that olive oil, the full spectrum of nut butters, almond butter, walnut butter, sunflower seed butter, were able to reverse and do better with heart disease than the drugs were. And they added in the Mediterranean diet. Here's what it says, quote, one of the researchers, Dr. Gonzalez, Department of Preventive Medicine, University of Navarra, so the findings emphasize the value of dietary versus pharmaceutical interventions in controlling cardiovascular likelihood. Quote, they showed a modification of the entire diet pattern managed to achieve in just 1 year. Results of pharmaceutical drugs did not after 2 years. This improvement was observed in the thickening of the arteries. They became less thick. So what they're saying in lay language, and this was a co-join with the Department of Neurology, University Hospital there, is that when you change your diet, really change it, and you have more vegetables and fruits and nuts and nut butters and olives and olive oil, you're going to live longer, you're going to reverse a lot of heart disease. And finally, look at your nails. What do your nails tell you about it? It's interesting because in Tibetan medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, Native American medicine, they look at your tongue, they look at your eyes, they look at your nails. This is from the Times of India. And here are some interesting things. A number of diseases and infections like anemia and lung disorders and fungal ailments may provoke surprising changes in your fingernails. Yellow nail syndrome. If your fingernails have a yellowish tinge, it could indicate an underlying fungal infection. According to the American Academy of Dermatology, fungus is a very common cause of fingernail infection, causing the nails to crumble and change in color. And besides this, this could also occur because of some kind of liver disorder or lymphatic disorder or a respiratory condition like chronic bronchitis. Then you have dark lines under your nails. And perhaps one of the most dangerous nail signs is that you should never ignore is appearance of dark lines beneath your nails. This is because these lines indicate one of the deadliest forms of skin cancer, melanoma. And the moment you spot these purple, black, or blue-black lines, see your doctor. Also, nail clubbing. This is the condition where you have an abnormal enlargement of your fingertip, and accompanied by the curving of your nails around the tips. Clubbing usually occurs due to reduced oxygen amount in the blood, and if you have noticed these signs in your nails, it could mean that you are suffering from some kind of lung or heart disorder, and also lung cancer. Pitted or ripped nails. Pitted nails are a very common sign. People with psoriasis or arthritis, sometimes this can be associated with crumbling and loosening of the nails from the nail bed. And apart from that, these small linear indentations may result from nail injuries and chronic dermatitis. Blue nails. The finding of blue lines or indentations that run across your nails may indicate trauma, previous illness, or exposure to Raynaud's disease. And then you have spoon nails. This is usually reflected as transverse or longitudinal concavity on the nails that may result from severe trauma and or exposure to environmental chemicals. White nails. In patients with tarry nails or white's nails, you may find that most of the nail plate becomes white in color and appears like ground glass. And that is usually people with cirrhosis problems, diabetes, or congestive heart failure. And this was also published by the Mayo Clinic in the American Academy of Dermatology. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us. like to welcome all of you to this program all over the world. I'm Gary Knoll. We have a lot of program to go today, including getting to your questions, our issue of the day, the triumph of capitalism, a jobless nation, from Professor John Causey. Before then, we're going to go to our guest, who's standing by in just a moment, but just a couple quick program announcements. First, our program, Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Nightmare, and how we as a nation, we as a world, are coming together this Wednesday evening, starting at 5 p.m., and then the movie Knocking on the Devil's Door will be shown. Then at 7 p.m., Professor Vandana Shiva and Greg Palast and Harvey Wasserman and Carl Grossman and so many others, and some of the victims of Fukushima, the children of Fukushima, the leading environmental advocate from Japan. We're going to have an enormous outpouring. Every seat is filled in the Ethical Culture Center, and we're going to discuss that and show how we, the people, coming together from all walks of life, all backgrounds, will then go forward to show how we can close down these nuclear facilities, promote cleaner energy, nuclear, wave, geothermal, wind, and get rid of biodiesel and get rid of the nuclear coal, oil, and gas over a period of time. But it starts, and it's a worldwide effort. So I one last invitation. I'm setting aside 10 of our seats for any of the producers at WBAI who couldn't get in because we've been full. I've set aside 10 seats for the management of producers as my gift to them, because it's very important that the station be at the lead of progressive causes. And what better way to help lead than lead in helping everyone? It's all inclusive. It's not about left or right. A life is a life, and they all have value. So that's this Wednesday night. Now, on Thursday night, we are going to have a dance party to say thank you for supporting this station. Thank you from the management, from the producers, from all the people. And it's a free dance party. That's why I'm playing this music, because it's all going to be disco music, dancing, having a good time, and a green environment. And Richard, where this environment's here, and all they have to do is just call and let us know they're coming so we don't overbook it. Our number is 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. I've already mixed all the music, but you want to get a DJ?
Absolutely. We're actually looking for a DJ to come in to volunteer and help us to make this party the best it can possibly be. If you have experience working as a DJ in any kind of nightclub or party environment, it would be really amazing to come and to make everyone dance.
Good. Give your number.
Sure. It's 646-926-5422. Again, 646-926-5422.
Okay. And please remember, this is a party that this station, its management, and all of its producers are saying thank you to all the people who have contributed, especially during the summer drive. It's just something that I thought was important that we all get together and say thank you by offering something joyful, fun, wonderful. People come, all ages, single, married, doesn't matter. Just come and enjoy yourself. And it's free. You pay nothing, okay, to get in. It's free. And over here is the person who's behind the scenes you all don't see. And we'll be down on Wall Street tomorrow because we're going to... I need a volunteer driver because we're going to get down there and film the demonstrators tomorrow. I was filming out of town on Saturday and Sunday. Didn't have a chance, but tomorrow we will, who are protesting. Valerie, what's up there, Valerie?
Oh, well, I just wanted to tell you we've been getting a lot of reviews on Knocking on the Devil's Door, and it's going viral over the Internet. People want to get involved or starting groups, and I just wanted to read a few of the comments the reviewers have been saying.
Sure.
Okay. The first one's from Robert Del Tracici. He's the author of The Field of the Bomb. He's a nuclear activist, and he teaches documentary filmmaking in Toronto, Canada. And he says that Knocking on the Devil's Door is a documentary about the nuclear world. It factors in the Fukushima catastrophe while reaching back in time to the infernal paradoxes and outrages that marked our nuclear beginnings. The film is made up of interviews with a wide range of nuclear adversaries detailing the crimes of the perpetrators of this technology. The film delivers one scorching interview after another. The host of commentators reminds us time and again just how invisible and hypnotic this technology has been. In the process of irreparably damaging our common world, it has unleashed a toxic logic in generations of scientists seduced by the power of the fissioned atom and the gold it commands. Knocking on the Devil's Door is a reminder of how and where we have gone terribly wrong with our energy and defense choices, and have gone so far down the nuclear path that it is not at all clear we will be able to retrace our steps and reverse the momentum. And another one we have from the founder of Naples Optimum Health Institute, Charles Marble, says the video is the best one you've ever done, and possibly one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. It was outstanding. My concern is, how do we get the rest of the country to see this important information? The information you covered in the video is alarming, engaging, and empowering. I just want everyone to be able to see this and actually begin to do something. It's an outstanding documentary and so greatly needs to be reviewed by the citizens of this country. We have one more by Jan Lindberg, who's the editor-in-chief of the Cultural Exchange, and writes that Knocking on the Devil's Door premiered in August. It has taken on the political, financial, and technical and other scientific aspects of a monstrously complicated and scary topic. In 135 minutes, the film takes on the semi-informed viewer from innocence to mind-blown amazement. My hope is that a film such as Knocking on the Devil's Door can radicalize if it can get well-distributed and talked about widely. Then it will be more likely that the nonviolent, non-disobedient movement can rise up to stop the nuclear power and disarm all known nuclear weapons. Until then, the average consumer seems to be much more interested in the next beer or how to get a faster new car, even if Knocking on the Devil's Door receives an Academy Award.
Well, first of all, I thank those people for reviewing it. This will not show on any of the major public television stations, even if it won the Academy Award, because they own, the media own the nuclear power plants. You're dealing with NBC, you're dealing with Westinghouse. They're not going to show anything that's going to condemn them. But that doesn't mean that we, the people, through the Internet, which they do not yet control, we have enormous capacity to educate, to share, and to stimulate dialogue and debate. That's where this begins. It begins Wednesday night. People can watch this over the Internet. Go to knockingonthedevilsdoor.com, GaryNall.com, or most importantly, ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and join us for the whole evening. And also, by the way, just as an aside, once that film is shown, the debate has occurred, the discussion has occurred, there's a 5-10 minute break, and then we premiere Death by Medicine, which, as you know, is 150 official, final, or won awards at all the major film festivals this year, making it the most winning documentary in the world right now. So that's they're getting a double feature. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a double feature since I was 10 years old and went to movies. Thank you very much. Let's now go over and say hello to my guest standing by. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to speak with Frances Moore LePage. She is the author of many books, including her 1971 bestseller, Dive for a Small Planet, which quite simply influenced millions of people about the cause of hunger and the food choices we make. And since then, Frances has become one of the nation's leading social activists, an invaluable intellectual resource, and a visionary for a new democratic social movement. And towards this end, she has founded the Small Planet Institute and the Center for Living Democracy. And she has also recently wrote Co-Mind, Changing the Way We Think to Create the World We Want, which argues that instead of becoming overcome by fear and guilt and despair towards our environmental and social crisis, we need to make efforts to alter our mental constructs to embrace a commitment to positive action. Nice to have you with us again.
Oh, thank you so much, Gary. Delight to be with you again.
In what ways do you believe that the environmental sustainability question, and here I'm referring to species collapse, global warming, the threats of monoculture and industrial agriculture, is being framed erroneously? And when we speak of the future sustainability of the planet, what is the most common view taken by our leaders, both on the left and right, and how are these thought traps that deter proactive solutions and actions, and how should the issue be framed? And then finally, go into what it means for people to develop what you call an eco mind, and the idea of learning to think like an ecosystem. The forum is yours.
Well, the fundamental contrast that I draw in eco-mind is really that between what I call the scarcity mind of fear and focused on lack of enough quantities of things, of food, of energy, you name it, parking places here in Boston, you name it, there's not enough. That is the frame that we absorb like an invisible ether somehow in this culture and that we're spreading in the world. And it is a frame of, many have called it the mechanical worldview, where we see ourselves as separate from one another, separate from nature in this limited world. And I believe that that is false. It's that the more that we learn about ecology, we realize that, in fact, that is the fundamental reality, that teaching us that we are all in connection, moment to moment. We're all in connection with one another and with all aspects of nature, and therefore we are all co-creators of our reality. As I quote Dennis Noble, who's a physiologist at Oxford University, points out the obvious, that in biological systems there is no, you know, a privileged command center, so to speak, telling the rest what to do. It's a form of democracy, he says, in which all components of a system are co-creating, shaping one another through interactions with one another moment to moment. And that is such an empowering way of seeing life, and fortunately it is increasingly reinforced by science. And so instead of fear, we begin to see possibility.
I appreciate those insights. Thank you. Do you see it's possible to dismantle the fundamental mindset, for example, of a Wall Street bank chairman or CEO or an executive of the oil, gas, or any nuclear industry? Is it possible?
Well, the question I have is whether those of us who are less, see ourselves less as beneficiaries of the current false construct, whether we can, the issue for me is whether we can see what power we have within this eco-mind, thinking like an ecosystem, and recognize that our inaction or our going along with the false frame contributes to enabling and empowering someone who, for example, has been very much a player in this economic crisis that is creating death and destruction. So I think that only as the rest of us who are less locked in, I mean, I think people who are beneficiaries of the current construct and see themselves that way will be the last to shift to this frame of alignment, which I talk about. One of the ways of describing the shift from a scarcity mind to an eco mind is to shift to a frame of aligning with what we know about human nature and the nature of nature, in which there is more than enough for each of us to live and flourish. And I think it's, for better or worse, it's those of us who feel less the beneficiaries who are maybe more able to make that shift. So I'm really speaking to my peers, in a way. How do we, the people that I can reach, how do we get better at defining the problem and the solution in a way that empowers more and more and more people? Because that's the answer. It's solutions are emerging bottom up around the world, and that movement of people who are less tied in is then changing those who are more in the command center, so to speak.
If the GOP and many Democrats, like Max Baucus, for example, had their way, they would dismantle so many of the environmental and consumer protections that we have in this country, mostly protections that we can thank Ralph Nader, who I just filmed for two programs last week down in Washington. It was the people around Nader, his supporters, but he's the one who created the Clean Water Act and the Clean Energy Act and Freedom of Information Act and the Environmental Protection Agency. Well, now we see corporations playing their own game of rules, and they're unleashing an onslaught of more toxins and chemicals into our environment, including nanotechnologies that are not proven safe. So what is your view about those kind of efforts to strip away the rules to protect consumers and nature? And do you have any ideas about how people can reach those people and show them the erroneous and irrational thoughts that are at the base of their views that they've embraced.
But Gary, don't you think that the key here is shifting the views of those who feel like they have to go along with this? Why is this happening in our quote-unquote leadership in Washington? It's because many of us have gone along with, and so I think that going along with reflects the messaging over decades now that government is the enemy, that human beings are just selfish materialists who have to turn over our fate to a force that works without us, this magical market that Ronald Reagan promised, that it works on its own, and we muck it up, so government mucks it up. We've got to shrink government. That means target the Environmental Protection Agency, target, all the safety net. So I think why is that being received by as many Americans as it is? And in what ways can we, through our language of the environmental movement, which in one way is what this book is doing, is, okay, what is an environmental frame that is empowering rather than contributing to the fear and despair that keeps alive this idea that, oh, we can just let the market do it? So I think that corporations who are now benefiting, whether they're, Massey and Coal or Exxon, whatever, they are enabled by a worldview that average Americans accept, that the market works on its own without us. And why do they accept that? Because they have absorbed this dim view of what human beings are capable of. And I'm coming back to the same theme that we've got to, in addition to pointing out the errors, the terrible tragedies that are coming about because of this assault on the most basic common sense rules to protect life, that we've got to be looking at why do people go along with this.
Well said. I believe, however, that we cannot relegate the Republicans or conservative Republicans to the problem because it's very clear. I've done the research. I have a commentary I'm doing tonight on this, that the Clinton-Gore White House was equally responsible for the deconstruction of a lot of our environmental protections, as well as the Glass-Steagall Act, NAFTA, GATT, the stripping the unions of their power, offshoring 1.6 million jobs. So I believe it's those who believe that their truths come through their party. Therefore, those who have stuck with the Democratic Party and its principles and the Republican Party and its principles, then no matter what you say, we want a smaller government, but they create a bigger government. But it's with the entitlements to industries and it's with the military-industrial complex. Or the Democrats are creating a government that protects them, but then it's not a government that protects them. So I believe that they have to ask themselves, are they capable of thinking independent of their belief systems? And I think that's crucial. My last question for you, however, is one that I wrestle with this all the time. And this is about the onslaught of the environment and freedom by corporate establishment supported by our virtual elected officials. They had the support when the Democrats controlled Congress and now when Republicans and Democrats control together. That is the very principles upon which Western civilization are founded. The myth, in my opinion, of eternal progress. If you begin by saying we need this eternal progress and a technological solution for every crisis, is this the fundamental cause of our world becoming less and less sustainable, and the sooner Western civilization itself is dismantled, or at least the prominent myths upon which it is based, the less the blowback and catastrophes will ensue, and the longer we wait, the more devastating will be the collapse of the environment and the global economy. And therefore, according to this kind of group of thinkers like Derek Jensen and Peter Kingsnorth in the UK and Jan Lundberg and others, more radical, even more militant methods need to be employed now. Your final thoughts, please.
Well, I think I have a somewhat different take in the sense that I see the belief system that is bringing us down is a belief system that does not trust human beings to be able to engage in real democracy, and therefore we turn over our fate, as I've said, to a market that what is its fundamental driving force is the concentration of wealth returning to those who already have wealth, and so we end up where Franklin Delano Roosevelt warned us in April 1938, he addressed a joint session of Congress, and he said, quote, "The liberty of democracy is not safe. If a people tolerate the growth of private power to the point that it is stronger than the democratic state itself, that, in its essence, is fascism." End quote. So what I see as the belief system that is taking us down is a belief system that leads to the concentration of power, of economic power, that then we've allowed and accelerated the infusion of economic concentration of power into our political system. And so therefore the common sense that can be tapped in regular citizens about what works and what doesn't, and a feeling, of course, our own survival and well-being depends upon the health of our larger environment and our neighbors. That kind of common sense reality of our connectedness gets wiped out by what we know brings out the worst in people. One of the key conditions that brings out the worst in us is the concentration of power. And I fear that if we then took even more a violent tack, it would just lead to more concentration of power, which we know, as I say, brings out the worst in human beings. And so my mission is to hold forth and make real what I call living democracy, that is, democracy that truly taps the common sense and values of most of us. And I ask, why are we together creating a world that none of us as individuals would choose? And that then has to do with this belief system that disempowers us. And that's why I wrote EcoMind, to try to crack that belief system.
I appreciate all your good work. I'm not advocating violence. I am advocating a stronger, proactive pullback from those who are in power. For example, if you are losing your home, and if you've lost your job to outsourcing, but you keep your money and your credit cards from a bank that has been bailed out, but is taking away your home, that's almost a part of the Stockholm Syndrome. In other words, these are the people who have caused your problems, so withdraw from that. And I'm also saying that we must withdraw from these people who have power, including withdrawing from the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, even if it means there'll be a period of time when they will dominate, until we can coalesce a progressive party that comes from a spiritual and inclusive understanding of how to resolve these issues. And virtually all the progressives I've spoken with have this common theme, that we must have a country that represents all of us and not just those who are the most powerful and the wealthy, because you're absolutely right. The moment we start that, they will come back at us so hard, because they know that their day of unbridled power and profiteering are over. They know as long as they keep everything within the arguments of Democrat, Republican, liberal, and then they win. So we cannot play by their rules anymore. We have to play by our own.
But as long as we are allowing private money to enter our political system, then regardless of what party, it's going to be not representing the people's voices, it's going to be representing concentrated wealth.
Absolutely.
So I think voluntary public financing is something that we can move on right now. You don't hear many people talking about it, but it's working in Maine, and it's allowed serious leadership there to pass environmental legislation that has kept just massive amounts of toxic materials out of the Maine environment. So we know now that there is Fair Elections Now legislation that could open the door to people running for office and being able to win without corporate money. And their Disclose Act is another act that's critical in allowing us to see what corporations are contributing to candidates, and then building a base for the people in the Supreme Court to be always, you know, that was a one-person vote majority that allowed that horrific decision in January of 2010 to unleash corporate money in elections,
Citizens
and that
United.
Can be reversed.
You're right, but what you
so
should...
I,
go ahead.
Structural question, the systemic question is, how do we get the democratic process back? And just have, I mean, I agree that there well may mean a different party, but if that party is using the same system of...
No, they wouldn't. That's the whole purpose. We believe as progressives that we should have no outside money in any campaign, that the campaign cycle should be 3 months, that no money at all, that you put down what your thoughts are, what your positions are on all the important issues. The public has a chance to review these by lottery. You have a chance to present your points of view, debate these. The public goes through a series of debates to get down to those who the public believes best represents the issues that they want to see in place. That's the only way you can do this. That way a school teacher, a farmer, can compete with a multinational corporate sponsored person like Obama or Clinton or Bush or someone. That's how many of us see it. But we're not going to get there until we recognize how much power that the corporations have. And right now, I don't believe they still represent. I think it would be great, don't you, Francis, if the Supreme Court justices who passed Citizens United, each day when they went to court, they had to have those patches like NASCAR has, you know, the driver that everyone is sponsoring. So we have Koch Brothers own me, you know, a big patch across the Supreme Court justice. And or Coca-Cola owns me. And you get, and so they walk in black robes that are covered with 100 different little patches of who owns that Supreme Court justice. That, I believe, would be a good step. Thank you very much.
I just want to underscore there are things we can do right now, too. And there is legislation that can help move us that way that has proven effective. So I just want to underscore that I talk about this in EcoMind.
We will look forward to reading that. Thank you very much.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for what you do.
Francis Moore LePay, author of Echo Mind. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. If you like dancing and having a great time, come and join me and all the other people who care about just having a wonderful evening together. From 7 to 11, it's our music, our time to celebrate life. And this station wants to thank you for helping it survive. The number to call for your reservation, which is free, is 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. I'm going to hold for today, the triumph of capitalism, jobless nation, until tomorrow, because I want to have more of you have a chance to call in and share your points of view. And instead, we're going to go to your questions that you've been writing inside here and some environmental updates. Elizabeth is in the studio. Elizabeth, before we go to you from our environmental segment, this is the latest here, and this is from Brussels. This is from a major peer-reviewed journal, and it says the following from the scientists from Royal Netherlands Institute of Sea Research. Quote, bacteria spreading in warming oceans presents major health problems, serious illnesses, and can cost hundreds of millions of euros. Quote, that is the alarm sounded in the paper. And this is after a two-day conference on this. A 200-page paper is a synthesis of the findings of more than 100 separate research projects funded by the European Union since 1998. And what it's saying is this. They're finding new types of bacteria and viruses and pathogens, waterborne pathogens, that now that the oceans are warming, are playing havoc and are destructive to marine organisms and to humans. And so... you better be very careful when you go into these warmer oceans now, because this is something that's altogether new. When you warmed up the ocean, you released bacteria that become pathogenic, and that is dangerous. So that's our latest on one more reason why we should pay attention to global warming. Now, what do you have from the mailbag?
Hello. We have somebody who's seen that the figures, if you go to Progressive Radio, Google it, it used to be at 93 million people hits, that is, and then it went up to 153 million hits, and now it's up to 193 million. What does this mean? It's gone crazy. It's viral out there. It's just gone viral.
Okay, here's what it does not mean, so we're clear. It doesn't mean that I have 190... I saw the figures yesterday because I was inundated while I was doing my research and writing commentaries for this week. people say, oh my God, you're approaching 200 million listeners. No, what it means is this. 7 years ago, when I created Progressive Radio Network, I believed that there was a need for a venue to bring other people who think in a more progressive way, outside of just being your card-carrying conservative or Republican or Democrat and liberal, who had ideas that were not adversarial, were not exclusionary, but really sought, how can we solve this problem without aligning politically, economically? And whose interest is this? Is someone going to lose money? If they're going to lose money, I can't report this because I could undercut my funding. That is gone. You need a forum that looks for the truth and says it. Looks for solutions that everyone can participate. What kind of truth could it be that if you're going to have a hunger problem, but you want to make sure your group, your tribe, your political party is able to take credit for it, but the other people will not benefit? There's still going to be people starving. Well, what kind of truth is it if people are starving and you've got the answer to hunger? All right? Stop buying their land, as hedge funds do, and equity partnerships do in Africa, and then throwing the natives off the land, and then holding that land so that when the time comes to grow crops, you will control the market on that and hence control the profit, and you will engage in crisis capitalism, where you exploit a situation to your advantage. If there's only so much water and we're past peak water, but if you control the private rights to that water because of globalization and because of structural adjustment, where you went into a country that had water, like, well, let me think, what would be a country that has a lot of water? In fact, more water than any other country in Africa. How about Libya? All right? And that's what the French were there. Sarkozy was there because of this. And now what you do, you control that water. Well, then, when everyone else needs water, who controls the price of it, the distribution of it? So controlling resources is what this is about in one state. So I'm just using that as an example. But if you really care, then you want to see that everybody who needs water has water and how to conserve it and how we don't conserve it. You want to educate people about the problem and the solution. So once this was created, then you find that the old alignments no longer fit. A lot of conservatives were ethical conservatives, but found no other form except the Rush Limbaugh shows and others to be associated with. But it wasn't a good fit. Many of the progressive liberals had the same thing, fitting on stations that were racist, radical, unprofessional, mocking any concept of quality or integrity. They were just self-serving pulpits for the misanthropic dysfunctional. But there was no other place to be if you had a view and you were aligned. But now there is. So what this means is 100 yesterday, this 193 million hits, almost 200 million hits, dwarfing all conservative and liberal radio combined, which was together about 90 million. What it means is people are going looking for those who hold progressive ideas, those who have broadcasts that are progressive, those who are defining themselves by what they're doing to help other people and not just limited to their existing paradigms. That's what it means. And from there, it's articles, it's radio. It's radio and it's articles. Now, within that, Progressive Radio Network is number one. You see that. And within that, our show's number one. But it means that it's gone viral. You're absolutely right. And that means that people all over the world now realize they have a voice that is reasoned, that is not exclusionary, that doesn't exclude you because of your race or income or your status, or whether you're one of these elite little, you know, liberal snobs, or one of these dumbfounded, absolutely dunderbrick mind conservatives. You're looking at the world from a more open, honest perspective. And that's what people want today. Those are the people coming by the hundreds of millions. It's not just a few. But they're not coming because, listen to me, I am not that catalyst. I'm merely the person who created the forum. There's a whole lot of people who are progressive, and we're going to introduce more who are progressive. There are hundreds of thousands who could share their voices. There are hundreds of millions who will support the movement. That's what it means. It is a silent revolution that has just been an overwhelming interconnectivity between people. One person talking with another. No ads, no media, no broadcasts, no interviews, nothing. And yet look at 193 million people wanting information. That's the key. That's why they're going there. Otherwise, they go to conservative radio or they go to liberal radio. And they're not. NPR, Pacifica, these numbers are dead on arrival. All right? They're passé. They're dinosaurs still trying to walk the earth as if they still have that big power because they have this monolithic way of thinking. They are so yesterday. But they're not hip enough, flexible enough, they're not free enough, they're not spiritual enough to understand what the hell's happening right in front of them. 193 million people are, and that will double. Once it goes this viral, it'll take on a life of its own. So as long as you have individuals, many individuals, willing to speak the truth, they will develop audiences they've never had. There'll be an interconnectivity, bypassing Fox, bypassing NBC, bypassing the Keith Urban and the Rachel Maddows. They will be insignificant. They'll only be significant to that small, very rigid ideological mind that needs their fix of I'm a Democrat, I need my fix. I'm a Republican, I need my fix. That's fine. But they're not going to be the ones that are at the point of change. You don't see those people in the streets. They may report upon what's in the streets, but they're not in the streets. The progressives are in the streets. They're making changes. But when will this happen? I predict in 4 to 5 years. The only time you're going to see massive change in America, you will not see any change from the rich or super rich. You will not see any change from the comfort of being one of the 40 million people who are living in the upper middle class. You will not see those who are the professional class going to the streets or causing problems. You will not see change coming from the middle class who are working, stable, comfortable, mainly bureaucrats, or people who are guaranteed, their lifestyle. You will not see change coming from the poor. But that still leaves you 100 million poor working class. They've been overlooked, abused, denied, no forums. That's the group that will cause the change. That will be, but it won't happen now. Because they are not progressive. They're still tied in to their, Glenn Beck is our leader, or, whoever it may be is our savior. It's not going to happen. We will see Greece on fire in the next 24 months. I believe the people of Greece will rise up and tear down their government and replace it, because the government has already agreed today to more painful cuts. And there's a point to where you've accepted the first cut, the second, but the tenth cut, you're going to say no more. You're giving all what you're taking from me to this bank? And they'll say, yes, we have to. To Goldman Sachs? Yeah, we have to, all of it. So you're making my child hungry? You're causing me not to be able to get an education? You're taking away my health care? So that one of these individuals on Wall Street can be made even more wealthy? No more. The Greeks will be the first. The Spanish the second, the Irish the third, the Italians the fourth, and then it will go viral. That's when the European Union will collapse, that's when the Euro will collapse, that's when the Chinese and other BRIC nations and the South American nations will switch off the dollar as a backup currency, as a currency of reserve. That's when we'll have hyperinflation. That's when 20 to 40% of the dollar will lose its value. That's when we'll go in, for a lot of Americans, about 240 Americans, to our deep depression. That's when social anarchy will occur. That's where you'll see class warfare. And that's only when it's possible that change will occur. Until that time, the media will not allow the voices of the Francis Moore LePays or those Patels or others, Donna Shiba. The institutions of power will maintain themselves, all with the idea that we need more police and more laws to restrict America's terrorists, and anyone protesting will be considered a terrorist. That's where we're going with this. But in 4 or 5 years, when people have had another Obama or someone else, and they see it's only gotten worse, and they can no longer blame the entitlements of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, the false demons they put up there, and there's no one else to blame, there's no one else to point the finger to, then the full reality of how wrong the American public have been and who they've supported will become apparent. At that moment is when better minds, better hearts, better people will be able to make authentic change in the United States. But between now and then, you will see the fog boiling slowly in the water. You will not see massive protests. When they had 60,000 protesting in Tokyo on Saturday, we had 800 in New York City. That's rather pathetic. Not for the 800 who were there, but for America that has 312 million people, can only get 800 to go out and protest what's going on. So the water takes a while to boil, but it is surely going to happen. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all very much for listening. I look forward to sharing more back with you here at 7 p.m. for the Progressive Radio Hour. Commentaries that can make a difference in how we think. Have a nice day.
Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tappenfeld.